Children are not yet teenagers, so they still think quite highly of my authority in all things. Those of you who've parented teenagers will fondly remember those days. Apparently, Neil Robinson used to say that if you want to know something, just ask a teenager because they know everything. My kids don't yet know everything. In fact, they consider me an authority on a wide range of subjects. Medicine, the human body, the floral kingdom, the animal kingdom, God's kingdom, the Bible, and so on and so forth. And sometimes they ask me all kinds of strange questions. And one of the kinds of questions will go something like this. Dad, who would win the fight, a great white shark or a Nile crocodile? And when they ask questions like that, they reveal to me their understanding that authority is ultimately resolved by conflict. Who wins the fight? Whether it's between fierce creatures or sports teams or between parent and child, on those occasions they test the boundaries. Or even when they ask me questions I cannot answer, thereby undermining my authority on a wide range of subjects in their preparation for the teenage years. Jesus' first public act in Mark's gospel is what one commentator calls a fight scene. You know, every good story needs to have a fight scene. This is a fight scene. Jesus' authority is tested and he emerges victorious. The one who has power over the enemy and the dark powers of the enemy. Today, you and I are invited to say the covenant prayer, a prayer in which we acknowledge Christ's authority over the whole of our lives. And the gospel lesson has some interesting things to teach us about Christ's authority. And the first lesson that we learn from the passage is that Christ's authority is disruptive. It's disruptive. You've just heard that gospel passage once, briefly. You haven't had time to study it, but already there is a picture that is formed in your mind from hearing that passage. You see a man disturbed in body and mind, a man possessed by an evil spirit who interrupts Jesus' teaching and shouts out. That's the picture you have in your mind. The man accuses Jesus of picking a fight. What do you want with us, Jesus Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? And there's a subtle hint that the demonic spirit speaks or gives voice to the teachers of the law and how they were thinking. Remember, the people compared Jesus' teaching to the teaching of the scribes, or the teachers of the law, and they say, oh, Jesus teaches with authority, not like those guys. You can imagine what the scribes are thinking. They're thinking just what the evil spirit says. Why couldn't you just leave things as they are? You have to come meddling. It was just fine the way it was. People knew their place. They knew how the world was and how they needed to respond to it. And you had to come meddling with things. Everything was just fine before you arrived. That's how the scribes would have felt. That's how the evil spirit felt. We aren't told what Jesus was teaching. And I think Mark intends for us to have the whole of Jesus' teaching in mind. His life and teaching, as you will see if you continue reading Mark's gospel, was just one disruption after the next. Time and again, Jesus just breaks the social boundaries and barriers. We'll soon see him forgiving sins in what was probably his own home. Now, everyone knew only sins were forgiven in the temple. Here's a man who thinks he has authority to forgive sins. He touches people he shouldn't touch, lepers, menstruating women, a dead girl. He fellowships at the table with people he shouldn't, sinners, tax collectors, and so on. Even his devoted followers are disturbed later to find that for them to become great, they had to become as servants. That was very disruptive for their way of thinking. And ultimately, right near the end of his ministry, Jesus, as you know, entered the temple with a whip and disrupted proceedings, overturned the tables of the money changers, and cast out those who were selling animals for sacrifice. Disruptive. That's the thing with Jesus. His authority intrudes into the sacred places of our lives and shakes up how we see things, mixes it all up. That's not always welcome for you and I. In the book I'm reading at the moment, the author describes a conversation he had with an atheist, and the atheist took great exception to the author's description of God, because it looked like the author was saying, God is the kind of God who meddles in our world, who's active in our world and in the lives of people, even active without us asking. Well, said the author in response, God didn't grow up in a middle-class home with his own bedroom. God doesn't think the way we think. God doesn't have the same boundaries we have. In the words of Isaiah, his thoughts are not our thoughts, and his ways are not our ways. Last week, we acknowledged the inequality in our world. Remember that? And we looked at what it would mean to follow Jesus and be fishers of people, and heard God's call on the church to be involved in issues of justice. And that was disruptive. A lot of people said to me afterward, that was disruptive. Those words were difficult to hear. They shook up how we see the world and our calling in it. The original covenant prayer, the one you have in your leaflet, starts, I am no longer my own, but yours. It's easy to resist those words, isn't it? In fact, I spoke to a gentleman earlier who's been worshiping in this church probably over 20 years, has never signed the covenant prayer. Because it's hard to say those words. When we say them, we're not thinking to ourselves, Jesus is my best friend forever, we like the same music, we have the same friends, we share the same interests, we're big buddies, let's get married, Jesus is my boyfriend. No. When we say that prayer, we're not naive. We know that doing things God's way doesn't mean doing them our way. And that's difficult. We feel some resistance. For some years, I preached in a church, and there was a man who was rather intimidating. He was very tall and about this wide and with forearms like this. And he would sometimes take my hand in his after the service, just about crush it, and tell me, look me in the eyes and say, I didn't like what you said. And then I'd tremble, and I'd be obsessing all week about what I'd have said to offend him. Would he come back? And he let me suffer for 5 years, and eventually, in a visit, He shared with me a story which helped me understand what he was getting at. He shared how the one Sunday I'd preached on trust, and I'd contrasted trusting in God with the hopeless reliance on chance we see in people who buy lotto tickets. And he went home, and there were his bowl of lotto tickets on the table. And he said to his wife, hey, God's message got to me today. And he burned his lotto tickets. And what I realized was when he greeted me with the words, I didn't like what you said, it meant God had disrupted his way of thinking and his way of living. When we say, I am no longer my own, those corners of our lives that are not yet surrendered to Christ, those corners of our lives which maybe are still held by the powers of our world, the dark powers of our world, will tremble and resist. We may find parts within ourselves saying, what do you want to do with me, Jesus? Have you come to destroy me? Have you come to destroy my free time? Have you come to destroy my wealth? Have you come to destroy my fun, my family? What do you want with me? That's a feeling that can happen within us as we consider surrendering to Christ. But Christ's authority doesn't only disrupt, it also liberates. Or maybe we should say Christ disrupts in order to liberate. Sometimes a wound must be lanced and the infection expelled before healing can take place. Jesus doesn't disrupt simply for the sake of it. Jesus disrupts those things, those forces, those powers, disrupts evil, which prevents you and I from living life to the full. Jesus disrupts those powers that hold us captive to ways of life which aren't fruitful. Jesus disrupts our sense of unworthiness, our low self-esteem, by saying, you, follow me. Who, me? Me? What have I got to give? You, follow me. I'll make you a fisher. Follow me. Jesus disrupts those parts of us that are given to hatred, unforgiveness, prejudice, and so on, to set us free. The man with the unclean spirit was an extreme case of one who was held completely captive. And with a word, Jesus set him free. With a word, Jesus sets you and I free also. That man I was telling you about who burned his lotto tickets, he did have a sickening moment as he watched them go up in flames when he wondered if that might just be the winning ticket. But when he told me the story, he was laughing because it was an occasion which for him had led to freedom. Not simply freedom from gambling. He had discovered within himself a sense of liberation to trust. He trusted God more. He gave more generously in every way. And he wanted less. It was a real sense of being liberated. On Friday, I attended the funeral of Elizabeth Story, wife of Reverend Professor Peter Story, who some of you may know or have heard of. And it was truly astounding to see how beautiful life can be when surrendered to God's purposes. Simply amazing. A number of messages had been printed in the pew leaflet, and one stood out, just grabbed my attention, and it was written by a young woman remembering how Elizabeth's story had taught her to pray. And she said this. I remember you telling me how in troubled times when your husband Peter was deeply involved in the dangerous struggle against apartheid, you prayed not that he would be safe, but that he would be faithful. Not that he would be safe, but that he would be faithful. That prayer is disruptive, but also liberating. It's disruptive because there's part of me that wants to be safe and comfortable. And wants my family to be safe and comfortable, there is still that part of me, shaped as it is by the forces of our world, which equates life with safe and comfortable. But the prayer is liberating. Because come life or death, there is no safer place to be than immersed in God's purposes. It's liberating because there is a part of me shaped as it is by God's Holy Spirit that deeply wants to live faithfully and to share God's love and God's hope, whether or not that means discomfort or danger. Recently, I got to see a type of authority in action. My daughter Grace was perched some 5 meters off the ground, preparing to go ziplining. You know ziplining? And the young instructor was encouraging her. It's safe, I did it at your age. But Grace was still hesitant. Something else was needed. The trusted word of a father's authority. I spoke. You'll be fine, my girl. I'll count to three. Then you go. One, two, three. And off she flew. Jesus' authority was rooted in his relationship with God the Father. The scribes, the teachers of the law, may have known many things and many details. Jesus knew God the Father and knew he was the beloved Son. You too are God's beloved children. And you can say the covenant prayer, trusting in God's love for you. Trusting that any disruption God brings is for your good and for your healing. Trusting that Jesus sets us free to be our true selves. Amen.